A National Indigenous Advisory Committee is working to fast-track a COVID-19 emergency response plan for our remote Indigenous communities. Federal and state health authorities are concerned that the impact of COVID-19 could be severe on the communities, which are amongst the most vulnerable of any group in the country. Pat Turner is the CEO of the National Aboriginal Community Controlled Health Organisation, or NACHA, and she's also a member of the COVID-19 Advisory Committee. She's in Canberra this morning. Pat Turner, welcome back to RN Breakfast.
Thank you very much, Fran.
Pat Turner, just how vulnerable are remote Indigenous communities if this virus gets into those communities?
Very, very risky indeed. The best course of action will be prevention to stop the infections getting in the first place, which means that we would like to see the isolation provisions for international or travellers returning to Australia imposed in special regions around Australia to minimise the possibility of infection getting into our communities.
So, sorry, Pat, can you just explain that to me precisely what it is you'd like to see?
We would like to see the certain regions within Australia where we have high concentrations of remote Aboriginal communities, mm-hmm. like Central Australia, the Kimberley, the Pilbara, the Top End, the Cape York area, etc., the Northwest and the Tripartite States area in Ngarrindjeri, Wangkatjungjeri and Pijingjeri lands, mm-hmm. Northern Territory, with WA and South Australia, completely isolated, and anyone going in there must undergo a 14-day quarantine to ensure they do not carry the infection into those communities.
Right, so that's any tourist who might be going along that finds themselves in or around one of those communities, you'd like them to be in a 14-day self-imposed isolation before they started mixing with the community. That's what you're saying. Any might be tourists, might be workers, might be government officials, might be families.
Yes, that's exactly right. We've got to isolate the communities and make sure that we've got the necessary protective equipment available in those clinics. So a number of our clinics are still waiting for those to be distributed from the PHNs. So instead of them being distributed directly to our services, mm-hmm. they've been handled through the PHNs, and we are still waiting. And even where it has arrived, like in the Kimberley, each of our clinics only has two sets of protective equipment.
So protective gear we're talking about? We're talking about gowns and boots and masks? Is that what you mean?
We're talking about gowns, gloves and, masks.
Okay. Just on the self-isolation, the 14-day period you're talking about, wouldn't that be a problem in the areas you're mentioning? Where would people isolate? Where would they self-isolate? Housing is such a major issue in these communities anyway.
Regional towns like, Alice Springs and so on have mm-hmm. to be set up with the proper facilities and the additional personnel that are needed to handle this. So we'd like the Army Health Force on call if we are needed and set up in places like Alice Springs, Broome, Katherine, Kununurra, etc., and ready to self-isolate first, the 14-day quarantine, and then be able to go in, because if our staff get sick, the health service will close and nobody in the community will have access to any health care.
And just before I get on to the impact of this, I think there has been an edict, hasn't there, of travel restrictions imposed into remote Aboriginal communities?
Yes, a lot of the communities have taken that decision themselves. And the Northern Land Council and the Northern Territory Government has withdrawn permits for non-essential travel. I don't know how anyone could think that it'd be essential travel required at this point, apart from, specialist medical personnel.
What about something like Kakadu National Park that hasn't been closed yet? Should it be?
Well, I believe it should be, because Jabiru, and the community is right there. All of those locations need to be closed, and I'm sure that the Northern Territory Government is looking at these in close partnership with our sector in the Northern Territory, and Natasha Fowles has been involved in the meetings nationally, the Health Minister, and is very, very good.
You're listening to RN Breakfast. Our guest is Pat Turner. Pat is the CEO of the National Aboriginal Community Controlled Health Organisation and a member of the COVID-19 Advisory Committee for Remote Communities. Pat, the concern is, you said, if any of the health workers get sick, then they won't be there on hand to manage this. But what if this virus gets into the communities? Some of our Aboriginal communities, remote communities, suffer some of the worst health outcomes in the world already. What's your fear if the virus comes in?
Those communities will be devastated. So everybody needs to take this seriously. I think everyone's, you know, sort of, there's maybe some fear in the areas where they hear this all the time, in the cities, and there's panic buying, which is ridiculous. But, you know, our communities, no matter where they are, remote is especially vulnerable because of the high levels of other illnesses that people already have. So if it gets into our communities, it will be devastating. So everybody has to take the precautionary measures, like, you know, the social distancing, the hygiene practices of washing your hands thoroughly and properly and drying them and doing that persistently and, you know, being sensible about it. But, you know, we're faced with major challenges because of the lack of facilities and the overcrowding of houses and no facilities to put the suspected patients into isolation, because we haven't got enough facilities as they are. And that's why the big push from us is to, one, get the guidelines out to our staff, and two, make sure they've got the necessary protective equipment. And there has to be much more done on the procedures to get people out of communities. Now, some evacuations can be done by road, by a nurse and an additional experienced health worker. And, you know, because if the symptoms start, it takes a few days for it to thing. And we can't get the testing done in remote communities. There is no testing.
Should there be? Is that something that should, some kind of mobile testing unit? Is that any use for that? Because even if they're tested.
Absolutely. We need mobile respiratory clinics that are going around constantly in the highly vulnerable areas. And they must be provided as a matter of urgency and
Pat,
funded by the government.
Even as you describe the measures needed to sort of keep this virus at bay, hand washing, you know, we can picture life in some of these remote areas. We know that some of these remote communities don't have reliable running water. We know they have overcrowded housing. Is there awareness within the communities themselves about this at the moment? How aware and switched on are they?
Our clinics and the Northern Territory government has put out numerous tapes in Aboriginal languages, and our clinic in Broome has sent out a tape in language to the people over near Balgo and in that region where they speak the same language, and that's on social media now. You know, we're doing everything we possibly can. First Nations media is working closely with us to get the messaging out through our community radio and television networks, etc.
And just finally, you mentioned there about getting people out of the communities if they're sick. The Northern Territory government said it's considering using non-residential community buildings for isolation, including some government buildings, and planning for the delivery of food, prescribed medications and essentials to people in isolation. Are you talking to the government about that, and how do the communities, how would they feel about being sort of, you know, chop it out into a Northern Territory government building?
Well, look, we've got no choice, and we have to use whatever facilities are available, or additional facilities have to be put in, or the regional towns have to have a facility for those who are suspected to have the virus, and those who have been diagnosed with the virus have to be isolated in special facilities as close to their communities as possible. We need additional funding yesterday to assist our services to cope with this. We will need additional staff without a doubt, because people will get infected or will refuse to go into those places to work without the necessary protections. So, you know, there is so much that needs to be done, and everything needs to be done yesterday.
Pat, not surprised.
I think that the $100 million is the least that is needed to be invested into our sector right now by the Australian government to help us do everything possible to control this deadly pandemic, which will be absolutely devastating for our communities.
Pat, yeah, I think you've got that message out loud and clear. Obviously, you sound anxious about the potential of this. Do you feel like...
I'm extremely worried.
Do you feel like the government is listening and is responding?
Well, we're providing them with a brief today for their meeting tomorrow on remote communities. But I want to impress upon everybody in the government that Aboriginal people, no matter where they live, are highly vulnerable because of the number of illnesses they already have, the pre-existing conditions, and we are the most vulnerable people in Australia. They're making a massive effort with the aged care, which is highly commendable, and they must do exactly the same for Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people everywhere.
Pat Turner, thanks very much for joining us.
My pleasure, Fran. Thank you.
Pat Turner is CEO of the National Aboriginal Community Controlled Health Organisation, NACHO, and a member of the COVID-19 Indigenous Advisory Committee. That committee's been up and running for about a month, but as you can hear from Pat, there's a lot to do, a lot of money needed, and a lot of action in terms of resourcing staff. It's not going to be easy to get all those resources, those remote communities, but of course, that's exactly what makes those communities so vulnerable.